Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're listening to The Ooze with your host, Venger Satanis, and the Beast.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. It's Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Central. I'm T.C. Downey, and this is my co-host, Venger Satanis. Venger, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, things are good over here. Got a new clean slate in my dating prospects, so looking forward to new adventures there, and a new interview with me has just been put up on a website called the Lovecraft News Network. That's a news organization I didn't even know existed until they started asking me questions and asked if they could interview with me, and I said, yes, of course. I don't think I've ever turned down an interview. And so, yeah, it's up on their website. The easiest thing to do is probably just go to LovecraftNewsNetwork.com/blogspot, I think. Or maybe just Google Lovecraft News Network and then just follow the website and find the link to my interview and read it. It's pretty cool. It's got pictures. So I was happy to do it. It was fun. And, yeah. So just wanted to mention that real quick.
Awesome. So you got a clean slate, huh?
Yeah. No more recycling if I can help it. You know, usually that's, I don't know, that's the crutch of the serial dater or the, I don't know, the lazy pickup artist. So I'm going to try to get away from that and just date new girls that show promise. Because I'm tired of dating a girl and knowing that it's not going to fully work out or lead to anything. And then, you know, but she's, you know, available or she's still interested in me in one way or another. And so, you know, call her back and hook up with her just because, you know, just because it's there. So I'm going to try not to do that and just date new women. Searching for something.
I think that's actually somewhat ironic because it has a great deal to do with what's actually attempted to be achieved during the processes of our show today, that clean slate that you're talking about, and not necessarily in the aspect that you're talking about it, but I suppose in one dimension of it, you can certainly apply that same philosophy. So we're going to be talking about alchemy today, as it says, well, of course, right there on the show page, and it's actually really kind of funny because whenever I begin to talk about alchemy to people, initially I always get the same first response. I got it from you. I get it from everybody. It's the science of trying to turn a base metal or a non-precious metal into a precious metal such as gold. But what is typically lost in transit when trying to understand the concepts of alchemy is that those are metaphorical attempts, and it was believed during the birth of alchemy that science reflected throughout all of the rest of life. So the processes that you would go through in different aspects of your life could be used and followed logically through science or through chemistry. What alchemists really believe is that they can take a base matter or a prime matter, which is a very dead, unthought material. If we're to relate it in aspect of the consciousness, perhaps a sleeping mind, and through
personality.
Pardon me?
Personality, as opposed to essence.
Even in terms of essence, yeah. But no, I think personality is actually personality is more of a side effect or a derivative of this base material that they're talking about, and what they're talking about is, for lack of a real concise way to describe it, what they're talking about is materialism or earthly association. And we'll get more into that later, but there's some interesting things in studying alchemy that I found out, and that is that there's just a ridiculous stack of notable people throughout history who practice alchemy. And the one that I found the most interesting, the one that struck with me the most, was Isaac Newton. I did not know. I always thought of Isaac Newton as being a physicist. But that was kind of a byproduct of his study of alchemy, actually. Again, the alchemists tried to take the sciences and spread them throughout every aspect of life, or vice versa, take every aspect of life and spread them through the sciences. For instance, if you're with a woman and you love her and it's intense, then there must be some chemical thing that's happening, and that thing should be able to be replicated in a more physical sense. And I think that that's what most of the alchemists were trying to do. There's a few things that you hear about that or are said or referred to throughout most modern philosophical discussions that originate from alchemy. For instance, the Philosopher's Stone. Now, your understanding of the Philosopher's Stone could really range or vary depending upon, which direction you're wanting to look at it from. But the idea of the Philosopher's Stone was that it was the elixir or the formula to which you could create these great transformations.
Right.
So universally, if you had a pound of lead, you could put a couple of drops of this Philosopher's Stone on it, and you would in turn, have gold.
Right. So metaphorically speaking, what would be the Philosopher's Stone to us these days?
Of what?
What's the equivalent or what's the correspondence of the Philosopher's Stone to us?
In modern time, the correspondence of the Philosopher's Stone starts with the unawakened consciousness or the dead essence, and through application of this formula, this process, you can in fact awaken and create a heightened spiritual being.
What's the process?
There's been many attempts and to give different steps. And I think that there's a four-stage step which is outlined, which makes the most sense to me. And I'll break them down for you.
Okay.
There's the first stage, which is blackening. There's the second stage, which is the whitening. The third stage is the yellowing. And the fourth stage is the reddening. Now, the first stage, blackening, in its process, the idea is to remove yourself from identification with earthly things. You always say this quote from Fight Club, and I always chuckle when you do because of its application in alchemy. But you always state you are not your fucking khakis. Well, it's exactly that. It's separating yourself from the idea that you are, attached to your family or your job or your status in this world, and that those are the things that you identify with, and therefore those are the things that consist of you. In blackening, the entire concept is that you get back to your root essence. And by removing your earthly associations, you, in essence, put yourself to the fire. And you burn away all of those impurities, all of those things that are causing turmoil and chaos and building up anger, fear, and frustration, which ultimately, obviously, lead to the desire of escape. So the first stage of alchemy, blackening, is to remove yourself from earth and water. Once you've, and by the way, earth being those things that are of material that you associate yourself, water is the emotion that's attached to them.
Okay. Makes sense.
So now, once you've gotten through that process and you've completely removed yourself from, you know, your association or your attachment to worldly objects, and you've also removed the emotions that are attached to them or in association with them, you now are at a point of a clean slate. Now, the next step, which is whitening, is called the stage of the moon. And what this really represents is once you've answered who you are, then you have to, at that point, come to a conscious understanding of what the true nature of us, our being, is. In essence, that's brought into light. Now, the moon, as we know, reflects the light of the sun. And so in whitening, the object is to mirror the essence of our true nature, to reflect that light, the light of our true nature. And so in whitening, psychologically, what we would be doing is we would be putting the meta model, which if anybody follows views, you would know from our NLP show what the meta model is. But in case you don't follow it, the meta model is the model in which you're how am I going to explain this? The meta model is the model in which you're trying to get to, what you're trying to achieve. It's the principal breakdown of everything, and then the result.
It would be a model to use to create your model, I would assume.
Right. Right, yeah, that's exactly it. Thanks for taking the wordiness out of that. So in whitening, you begin to reflect your true nature, and you mirror yourself after that. Now, the next two steps, the difference between them is massive, but not so much. The next step, yellowing, is getting in touch with the divine intellect. And by that, it's creativity flourishing through you. It's the actual process of expansion of your consciousness and the actual evolution that you undergo. And so this is typically considered the stage of solar radiance. And then finally, the reddening is after you've created all of these bodies and you've moved through all of these stages, and you've now become enlightened beyond other people's comprehension. Now in reddening, you have the task of descending back to the world, basically to light up the way for others to follow you through. I mean, there's many more associations that happen in each of these stages, but overall, this is the way that I have come to interpret it. And so this is what I'm relaying to everybody. Alchemy itself is, to me, is not so much fascinating for the factors that, you know, that the actual process might work, but rather it's the idea that the concept that through each of these stages you achieve different things.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm sure you can find parallels with those stages in many different esoteric philosophies and magical practices.
My honest intake, my honest view on this is that alchemy, the science of alchemy, although it may not be the original esoteric philosophy, I do believe it's a derivative, a direct derivative of the original esoteric philosophies of this world, and that's why you can find so many parallels through so many different practices.
Right.
Modern alchemy is so mixed and muddled with Zen and Taoism and many other schools of thinking that it's just absolutely amazing. And they all seem to have the same overall concept of taking these steps towards enlightenment, and once you've obtained it, coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my suspicion is that alchemy is insisting that this process is actually happening through a reincarnated state rather than all during one existence. But I'm sorry, we've got somebody in the chat room right now who seems to be very familiar with alchemy just from some of the things that I've said. So I want to go ahead and invite you to give us a call, 347-989-1371. We'd love to have somebody else who may be more of an expert on this subject matter than myself or Avenger. Please feel free to call in at any point in the show. I think it's fascinating that Isaac Newton, you know, was a man of so many different statues, and it all basically, from what I can see, it spins from his esoteric philosophies.
Mm-hmm.
Alchemy.
Now, did he do any, I guess, new work with alchemy, or like, are there any unique contributions that that Isaac Newton made to alchemy, or was he just a practicer of it or a follower of alchemy?
I think because of the nature of alchemy, absolutely every piece of work and every aspect of his life was a direct contribution to alchemy. His laws on physics, his views on mathematics, all of those directly related to alchemy.
Okay.
The way that alchemy transpires, again, is it's a process of correlating science or the nature of science to the nature of spirit. And so you can't have one without the other in that.
Right.
I mean, I've started writing a pretty lengthy little article on this as far as, you know, my views on it go. And I'm not going to say that I 100% agree with all the teachings of alchemy, but I certainly... I find them to be a good base from which to build my model, my philosophies off of.
Right. I guess from my standpoint, I would want to know how it fits into the work in general, and you know what maybe differences or similarities. I mean, I can already see a lot of similarities because the work is about transformation, and so is alchemy. But what is it about specifically about alchemy that maybe can't be found in other philosophies?
Specifically, in my opinion, what cannot be transmitted through other schools of thinking as efficiently as it is through alchemy is the allegory in trying to relay the things of the understanding of the things of the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually watching a little YouTube video entitled Platonism and Alchemy, where this professor is actually he's reviewing Carl Jung's look into Plato, and he's showing some of the parallels between Plato and alchemy, and he's also expressing in there that where Carl Jung was afraid to actually get into the spiritual aspects that Plato got into, he had no problem dabbling in the alchemy of it, the science of it. So, I mean, alchemy is it's a good solid set of tools for transponding symbolism. And, you know, giving you a more divine understanding of those symbols and their relation to your essence or your soul, your spirit, however you want to call it. Where a lot of other thinkers, a lot of other gurus and teachers have tried very hard to paint a nice broad picture for you to understand the experience that they're trying to transpond to you. Alchemy is efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very mutable, pliable. I'm not really sure which word I want to use in that place, but it's certainly quite fascinating, and it probably will be something that I study for a very long time. Just simply
study it, or to try to use it and implement it, because it seems very cut and dried. Like there are these four processes, and they're pretty easily defined. And then it, you know, it leads you from one place to another, and then that's kind of it. Is there a lot more going on underneath the surface?
Oh, there's a ton more, man. I mean, I've only actually been hardcore on this for about a month's time. And, you know, well, what you see here is just the beginnings or the fruits of those studies. I think there's a lot of things that you can learn from it once you understand the actual process of it. Conceptually, you can take and use this process to break down every defect in your entire existence and replace this model with a more functional, perfect, or closer to perfect piece. I could take, say, for instance, I had an issue with the addiction of cigarettes, which I do. Through the process of outlined in alchemy, it's reasonable to assume that I can take that defect, break it down, and then build it back up to where I don't have this defect any longer.
Right.
So I think it's just another great tool, just as neuro-linguistics programming is a great tool. I think alchemy has the same kind of value, but it's more attuned to people who are maybe more spiritually scientific-minded, if that's even a particular type of mindset that can be attained.
Okay.
Have you had a chance to really look into any of this?
Yeah, a little bit. I looked at the Wikipedia page, and a little bit other, Google searching, and I found, the basic tenets of it and what it's about, and I think it's useful just because of the fact that it mirrors the work itself, the fourth way, which is basically the heart and soul of the Cthulhu cult. But other than that, besides, a few more people in history adhering to alchemy rather than the teaching, and then the interest of them picking up, like alchemy picking up, like you say, like Taoism and Buddhism and things like that, to be honest, I can't see too much value in studying alchemy alone as opposed to something which in my mind is more detailed and, I think it's a better roadmap to transformation and getting to where we want to go in the work than in alchemy. I think alchemy is, if I can put it this way, it would be maybe a watercolor, an artistic watercolor of the map rather than the map itself. And so, I think it's all well and good to look into and to study alchemy. I don't think it's the thing in itself. I think it's just a nice symbolic representation of the thing. Does that make sense?
It does. I think if you look more into alchemy itself, you'll find that the work, or at least the work as I understand it, and alchemy are their equivalents. There's none to little differentials between the two. They're just it's a matter of taste, where I may prefer to draw a circle from right to left. You may prefer to draw a circle from left to right. Some may prefer to draw a circle from top to bottom and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know too much about alchemy other than the little bit that I've read, but I guess I'd be interested to hear what alchemy or people that practice or study alchemy think about similar things in the work, like say like buffers or like a person's chief feature or the many eyes inside of a person, or external versus internal consideration, or, you know, one of a hundred myriad little tiny details that the work talks about and focuses on in different aspects, things like the physical and emotional and intellectual centers, the magnetic center. I mean, does alchemy have an explanation or a tool or some sort of guidelines for each one of these things that's also in the work? Or is it just kind of, to me, it seems like alchemy is more of a general overview, whereas the work is like the nuts and the bolts and the specifics and the actual mechanics of how everything works and interrelates.
To answer you, yes. It does have a set of tools to help deal with, understand, and facilitate all those aspects. It's just done in a more allegorical sense.
Okay.
And so instead of you having to focus on this one specific little point, it takes all of the points that may have some kind of association or even at that direct reference to that particular point, and it draws a symbol of that point. One of the things that has happened throughout the occult community since the birth of the Hermetic philosophy is there's a lot of parallels that are drawn between things. You know, things that are lunar are also feminine in nature, and they associate with the water. And, you know, and all these associations are all, it's all allegory for the different things that are unveiled. So, that there most certainly is a very valid connection between the two of them, and there should be, because when Gurdjieff brought the work back from the Eastern civilization, you know, that he didn't realize, or maybe he did realize, I don't really know that for sure, but alchemy was born there in the same schools of philosophy and thought.
Mm-hmm. Do you think maybe it came out of I think that everything originally came from one principle, divine or semi-divine or maybe infernal teaching, but like I said, from what I know, which, you know, isn't that much, I suppose, because I haven't fully studied alchemy to its fullest extent, it seems that that alchemy is more of a watercolor, you know, maybe an oil painting interpretation of the thing, of, you know, the teaching of or the process of this transformation. But the work is like a detailed architectural schematic. And while I think, you know, it's nice to have both, I can't see myself spending more time on the watercolor or the oil painting or the artistic interpretation rather than, a detailed set of plans, which I metaphorically I liken to work itself, the fourth way.
Now, I think myself that the difference between the watercolor and the architectural schematic is that more people can grasp and understand the watercolor painting over the architectural. So perhaps it's a stepping stone, and then you could go in that direction. But when you think about, I had this freaking remote control car that I had received when I was a young child, and this remote control car, it had to be assembled prior to actually being able to use it. And the directions were so well above my comprehension level as a child that it was very difficult to follow each step to complete the process. However, on the other hand, the next year I received a bicycle, which I had to assemble as well, and it had a picture-by-picture instruction manual to getting to the end result, and that was very easy. Mm-hmm. And so I think ultimately, even though it's beautiful to understand the intricacies of the work, the end result is really what's worth achieving.
Yeah, I totally agree. I just don't know if, you know, if someone can build a house from a watercolor, I guess that's, but, you know, but I would love to be, you know, proven wrong or to be shown something that alters my perception of alchemy. And, you know, I think anything can be useful. You know, little bits can be taken from a variety of sources and incorporated into one's own personal transformation or understanding of the work. So, you know, I'd love to find out something that makes it easier for me personally, because I know, you know, the practicing of evolution and awakening and all that stuff is very difficult. And it's time-consuming, and it's easy to get on the wrong track. So yeah, I would love to find out something that would make it easier for me. And hopefully, alchemy will provide one or more keys to that. I just haven't seen it yet, I guess.
Right. I think if you really sit and, you know, process the different levels of allegory that are being projected through the ideas and alchemy itself, you come to realize that there's an extreme emphasis on the physical. There's an extreme emphasis on the psyche, and there's an extreme emphasis on the spiritual. And it, like the work, describes a process in which you can work all of those together to reach that state. So, again, it's just a matter of preference, I suppose. But I think that the concepts behind alchemy are beautiful in the fact that there's so much mystery involved in them. And the mystery seems to always give you an answer and then give you 10 more questions to ask.
Without trying to put you on the spot or anything, is there an example of some sort of allegory or parable or some little alchemy story that you can share with us that might sort of open our eyes to exactly what you're talking about?
Do
you have any on top of your head, or maybe if you found a website where they have such stories or allegories?
Let me think. Well, I can think of a couple of stories, but trying to remember the inevitable point to each story. There's a story of I'm trying to remember if he was a blacksmith or something, but it was some kind of person. And then a man appeared at his door, and he explained to him that he could add just this little bit of powder to this mixture and change this base metal from lead to gold. This is actually, I believe, where the whole idea came from. And he came in and he sprinkled this little bit of magic dust in there, and surely it became cold. And then some years later, the same thing happened to another man far away. And then I guess the deal of the story, I don't remember all the specifics of it, but the idea in the end of it is that there is this guy who turns base metal into gold for the king. And then the king asks him to replicate it. Well, he doesn't have any more of the special powder. And so he goes and he tries to replicate it. But every time he does try to replicate it, it doesn't work. And so eventually the king sentences him to death. And I think the whole parable of it itself was that you have to go out and find those answers for yourself. That I can't give you this detailed key to transformation, because every person is so intricately different. And, you know, there's so many things that vary in psyche and physical aspect and in the realm of spirit. There's so many things that are different in each person that I may well need more work on my physical than on my psychological or spiritual. On the other hand, you may be lacking in the psychological, but be, you know, excelling in the physical or spiritual. And so, you know, you have to take in and use these tools in accordance to the machine you're working on. You know, it makes no sense to grab a set of metric wrenches to go work on a 1960s American car. It's not going to work. It's not going to fit.
Okay.
So, other than that, I mean, of all the things that I've read, I've mostly been focusing on the actual process itself, and for my own selfish means, of course.
Of course.
Of course. I mean, you know, my idea is that there can be a kind of a hyper alchemy that happens, a futuristic hyper-alchemy. Now that we have all these other sciences and schools of thinking that didn't exist during the time, Nicholas Flamel, is that the story I'm referring to? Sorry, this guy just popped up with Nicholas Flamel. Is this the story? Let me see. I hate this lag. They don't realize that we're talking like 10 seconds ahead of what they're hearing.
Right.
Where was I? But my ideas are that we can take all the current psychology, all the current metaphysics, all the current understandings of all these different principles, and now come back to the idea of working on the self, and use all of the principles of all of these things in the internal examination of ourselves. For instance, we now know that we can transmit a signal from Wisconsin to Florida in a blink of an eye, in the form of a text message. Well, there's got to be some process and application to it that is applicable to working on ourselves. I mean, the way that I understand the world to be, the old statement, as above, so below, so above, it rings true in everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, my suspicion is that perhaps that sort of hyper-alchemy you're talking about is the work itself. That is the fourth way. That's the natural logical progression and evolution of the process of transformation from, you know, centuries ago. That now what we're dealing with and what we're using is the difference between an abacus, you know, from the 18th century to, you know, some sort of modern computer in 2010. And whereas the abacus might provide a couple of valuable lessons and, and it's nice to study in a sort of antiquated way from like where things came from. You know, when it comes to crunching numbers, I think you pretty much have to side with the computer.
Oh, sure, but then we also have to make way for the realization that the computer is not the end of all things. In fact, the computer is just a gateway to a artificial intelligence. It's, you know, eventually there will be a fully automated artificial intelligence that's been formed from these processes. And so I guess I'm thinking more in terms of this hyper alchemy that I'm talking about being the graduation from the work, if the work is our most current system.
Okay. When you talk about artificial intelligence, do you mean like in ourselves or more of an external force, like, you know, Cthulhu or Satan or you know, whatever dark forces that might lie in universe be out there?
Okay. In my thought process, something occurred to me the other, I think it was yesterday when you and I were having a conversation, and you made reference, because I've been trying to reach these different pinnacles of awakening and then create mapping points in them. You made reference to automating those and allowing those to go on to autopilot so that I can continue to progress further without having to go back and maintain that which I've already started.
I just wanted to stress, especially to everybody listening, that when I said, like, put awakening on autopilot, not only is it sort of a contradiction in terms, it's probably not the best way I could have put it. I guess creating set points and parameters is better than my initial calling it autopilot, because as everybody knows that studied the work, we're kind of on autopilot all the time. You know, that's what we know as sleep or waking sleep state. And the parameters and the set points is that I feel once someone has been experienced enough with the work that they can create in themselves sort of an early warning system. When something is about to happen, they can catch it, or they can catch themselves, and then they have an opportunity to sort of become more conscious when they need to. You know, under a certain parameters, under certain specific, you know, things that happen in their life. Like, you know, when you're, let's say your wife or your significant other, your girlfriend, just starts yelling at you and laying into you about something stupid, well, you can create this sort of set point or parameter that says, like, just before you go off on her, and I don't know, yell at her or bring up the fact that she's a dumb whore or even hit her or something like that, you can catch yourself and you can then act more appropriately according to, you know, what's ultimately going to be best for you. Whereas someone that's just in the sleeping state, or someone that just awakens for a few moments at a time every day, maybe they're not going to be able to catch themselves in that moment because they're so overcome with, you know, with anger or negativity or rage or disappointment or depression or something like that, that they do something that they normally wouldn't do. They are overcome and they lash out, you know, in a mechanical way. But the sort of, I guess, quote-unquote autopilot awakening, or creating the set point and parameters, will allow you to, like I said before, catch yourself before you're going to do something, before you act, and then you can take a moment and collect yourself and remember yourself and then act according to the work and your higher self, your higher centers, things like that.
Quick note, not to change subject or anything, but the mention of Nicholas Flamel that this gentleman in the chat room did is actually the story that I was referring to. He's actually guy who successfully replicate its recipe for the Philosopher's Stone, producing first silver in 1382 and then gold. So this is actually the historical event, the historical person who did in fact use this supposed Philosopher's Stone to create this chemical transformation. So I just thought that was fascinating because I'm trying to listen to what you're saying and read this because the name sounded really familiar and now I know why.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the things that I have read over the past month. Ultimately, the idea, the main paralleling idea between the work and alchemy is the removal of imperfections.
Mm-hmm.
And so putting in that automated system, that early alert system, is only, in my opinion, the most logical step in the actual evolution of this process. So ultimately, I guess, the hyper-alchemy, as I was talking about it, would certainly produce that as one of the products of it.
Okay.
So, but I think there's a lot more that can go on. Once you've gotten yourself to such a point that certain things no longer apply, like if you were a terrible a terribly habitual offender in the department of creating falsehoods. You know, once you've gotten past and you're no longer, you know, spewing mistruth at every corner, you know, there's no reason to continuously go back and look at, am I telling lies? You know, you're already in the habit of being completely truthful and honest with both yourself and the people around you.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that I'm talking about with this artificial intelligence.
Okay.
You know, creating this meta model, this hyper model.
Maybe, and I'm just going to guess and throw this out here, but perhaps calling it an unnatural intelligence might be more the thing than artificial intelligence, because, well, I think of a couple things when I hear the phrase artificial intelligence. I think of, I guess, computers, and the word artificial, it kind of, it has certain connotations, so I just, and maybe those connotations are correct. For what you're talking about. But I just kind of want to examine it a little more closely and throw my own contribution out there and see if what you think of that. Do you think unnatural intelligence is more appropriate than artificial intelligence, or do you think artificial intelligence is more what you're after when talking about this?
Let's first look at what the actual term artificial means. I could go directly to the dictionary right now, which I will while we're talking, but my understanding first before we get to the dictionary definition of it, my understanding of artificial is created or simulated. Hmm. And something that's artificial, it is created or simulated.
Okay, I can see where you're going with that, yeah.
And so, unnatural, certainly. Anything artificial is unnatural. As a matter of fact, the word unnatural is in the fifth line of the adjective definition of artificial.
Mm-hmm.
But it's simulated.
Artificial also makes me think of, like, you know, like artificial foods and flavoring and stuff. And
sure. Well, it's somehow
illusion or facade or something. And I was pretty sure that you weren't referring to that particular.
I think the. I'm trying to really gather my thoughts here before I reply to this. So just give me a quick second.
Sure.
I don't mean artificial in the sense of it being an imposter or it being illusionatory or imaginative,
right.
But more artificial in the sense that it's something that has been honed by the mind of man and then been given its purpose and its function, much in the same aspect that a computer is. There is nothing that our mind can't do that this computer can do.
Okay.
You know, outside.
Like self-created.
Self-created, yes. Self-created. I think that ultimately is ideally what I'm looking for, self-created intelligence, this created self-sustaining system of nurture. All that I can see are the benefits of it myself, because I haven't, well, of course, gone far enough down the path to go, okay, here's the negatives or the consequential things that are accompanied to it. Right now, all I see is the potential of the idea of actually being able to not only remain in a sustained heightened awareness, but also build layers to filter out and deal with the unnecessary things that may try to break you away from that concentration.
Also, the intelligence, the self-created intelligence, the artificial intelligence, whatever we want to call it, it's also interesting because the new evolved sigil, the Cordalis, symbolic magic, that's basically a form. That is a form of artificial intelligence or unnatural intelligence or something that is, a few steps above, and that it doesn't work along with nature, but in fact is contrary to it, and it's sort of a storehouse for knowledge and power and in setting things right in the correct way according to the work. And so, and if anyone wants, it's going to be a big deal for the cult. There's a preview up on the forum right now and a couple other different places, like the blog on MySpace. But it's also going to be featured in new editions and updates for different websites that we have. So, I don't know. So I just wanted to mention that because it's symbolic representation of exactly what we're talking about now.
In my opinion, and we're getting ready to run out of time here, so I'm going to throw this out real quick. But in my opinion, the new meta sigil is, in fact, alchemical in nature itself.
Yeah,
and
I agree with that.
It is absolutely the beginning of a whole new era in the cult of Cthulhu. Well, that's all the time we got, though, folks. We'll see you next week.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.